Thank you, Dr. Wisdom, and thank you, Dr. Williams, for that introduction. My portion of the discussion, I'll focus primarily on the utilization of community health workers, why we chose community health workers, and what they're doing to address the issues that you just heard so much about in Detroit. I do not have any financial or any other anything relationship or interest to the development of this presentation. So transforming place, that's a big task. And what I want to talk to you about, as you just listened to all of the statistics about what's going on in Detroit, the land mass and the fact that a lot of programs were underutilized, creating this execution gap that exists between programs and what the community needs, we utilize community health workers to get to the core of women at risk for poor pregnancy outcomes, the healthcare community, and community influences and social support. And in such, our community health workers were chosen specifically out of a pool of community health workers who had been trained on the community health worker competencies and who also basically, like many community health workers, and the reason you want to use community health workers, have this great relational skill set that they can navigate communities, they can navigate organizations and systems fairly easy to get any public health message out there, as well as to start to affect the change that most of us would like to see, or all of us would like to see, in our communities. So exactly what are we addressing? Infant mortality, as you see by this slide, is just the tip of the iceberg. Our community health workers are addressing those things that are below the surface. We start to look at, or we actually do address, social isolation, and not just someone feeling lonely, but someone who is literally cut off. And as Dr. Wisdom described, the landmass and the usage in Detroit is great areas where there's nothing there. Transportation, even though it's a major city, transportation remains to be a problem. We don't have a mass transit system. And Dr. Wisdom just described how many households don't even have cars. Housing, that's an issue, affordable housing. And you saw the statistics that stated that a lot of the women living or families living in certain communities are paying over 38% of their income towards housing. Poverty and education and social chaos and unintended pregnancy and morbidity. What happens, and this is much of what we're facing, what happens when those children who do survive, who do live, but are faced with all of these issues, is, and that's actually who we're addressing and who we're helping. Because those kids face the worst of the worst. They have a lot of times developmental issues, mental issues, as well as, you know, it causes a burden on a lot of systems that are helping, the school system and social service systems. And it diminishes the quality of life for these children. And so that's another reason why it's essential to have someone who can relate to what's going on in these communities, such as a community health worker, to address these. But we knew that just being a compassionate member of your community and having empathy for what a person is going through in their own household, we knew that that wasn't enough. We recognized the need for skill training, and we looked to our task force and their strengths to develop our training for our community health workers. And at the core, they went through a 4-week intensive community health worker competency training through one of our partners, the Institute for Population Health, and then they had other trainings from different partners. I'd like to specifically point out motivational interviewing, computer training, and I don't see it up there, but data collection. And data collection was really, really, really important. These are some of the roles, and again, some of this is not new to you all, but community health workers, or CNNs as we call them in our program, community neighborhood navigators, they are advocates. Many of them have taken on the role of having to speak up for the participants that they see, and more often than not, we teach our participants how to be their own best advocate, their confidants, their liaisons, and motivators, and recruiters, and mentors, home visitors, and connectors, and even educators, educating them on maternal child health issues, as well as health and goal setting and skill building. including pre and interconception health as well. Now, I can talk to you all day about how awesome community health workers but I thought it would be great for you to hear from not only one of our community health workers who's here, Linda, but one of her participants. And where did my arrow go? Just heard in the video, having a community health worker, and a community health worker is someone who is relational. They, because of their lived experiences and because of their compassion and passion to help women who may have been in similar conditions that they are, women from their community, that is at the core of what makes a community health worker effective. And what makes using this modality the best way to address these issues. And earlier I said that we help our participants to create a goal, but we actually moved away from doing regular goal setting. We actually started having our participants to tell us what their vision is. In doing goal setting, we noticed that we kept getting like mechanical-like answers, almost like when you were in school. Somebody said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you go, a teacher, a doctor, like, and there's really no real connection to that. We noticed that with our women, that we would say, you know, what are your goals? You have short-term goals. Oh, I want to move. Oh, I want to get a new car. But there was nothing about their lives that said that that's what they wanted to do. But when we started to ask them what their vision was for their lives, that's when we started to see some things come together differently. And we did a little play on the Women Inspired Neighborhood Network, or WIN acronym, and asked people what their WINspiration is and their vision. And the vision boards that these women created were awesome. They had visions of getting married. They had visions of buying new homes. And it was from there that we started to help them to set their goals, and we used SMART goals to do that. And that gave them a framework from to start thinking outside of the crisis that they live in every day and to start to work towards something else. Not that the crisis stopped, but at the same time, it gave them a way to see that, you know, maybe there is something I can do. We also addressed the social isolation and connect women to different things through civic engagement. And one of the things that we're most proud of is a community mural that we put together. This mural is being displayed in the three communities that Dr. Wisdom pointed out, but it is made up of tiles from the women and the community members in the three communities that we're targeting. There's also a lot of our funders and partners, community and business partners also participate in this artwork. But the community had a really, really profound reaction to hanging this mural. They felt so connected to it, and they actually, we had one gentleman to point out the different houses in that, because those three different houses actually represent the housing stock of what houses look like from those three communities. He was so drawn to that, and he recognized that, oh, this is how the houses look in my neighborhood. But he also recognized that it was because of the collected work that all of the people put into it that created this beautiful mural. But in our civic engagement activities, we also encourage our women to volunteer with our program and others, and to get involved, whether it's with, you know, some political action or something, but just helping them to understand that they have a voice. And quite often that voice they don't know that they have until somebody points it out. With all the things and all the work that community health workers have to do, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that compassion fatigue is real. And so I would also be remiss if I didn't tell you how we help our community health workers to stand strong and to stay encouraged. So we give them appropriate real-time focused support. They have clearly defined roles. They understand the workplace culture. We do a lot of skill building, whether we commission the training or we just allow them to find trainings that they're interested in and go for it. A lot of motivation. We have some one-on-one time. We have group meetings where, you know, certain things are acknowledged with our team members and so on. I won't read it all. Okay. But I would like to point out this quote from our fearless leader. We're not having fun. We're doing something wrong. Dr. Wisdom believed that. When I first heard that, I was like, really? But I do get it. I do get it. I do get it. I was doing so good. Okay. So I actually only have four more slides to go. So with all the hard work that community health workers put into this program to make this program the success that it has been, that's led to zero infant deaths, I just wanted to point out a few of our statistics. We have, and remember, we are only focusing on the three communities in Detroit, so whereas these numbers might seem low, they're really big considering our audience. But we have over 1,000 unique website visitors and expo attendees. We have recruited and enrolled 364 pregnant women, and that number is actually closer to 400, a little over 400, but because of paperwork and data that we can't use, it dwindled down to 364. We have 200 live births that we have recorded so far, and we've recruited 443 non-pregnant women who are educated on pre- and interconception health. We also have 324 participants that have been, the analysis in this, I'm sorry, includes 324, even though we have more. Follow-up data is collected on breastfeeding, immunizations, and a lot of things. So as we move on, and I'm rushing through, I just want to point out one or two things with, as we compare the success of what's going on within our program and with the city of Detroit, you'll notice that, like, for instance, the program overall, WIN Network, compared to Detroit, we have Detroit has over a 12%, like close to 13% babies being born with low birth weight, and ours is half of that at 6%. In Brightmoor, when you break it down by community, we have a low rate of, I'm sorry, I have these numbers written out, of about 4%, whereas in the city, In Brightmoor, they have a higher rate of over 14%. And then our average age or gestational birth is 38.3 weeks. Time's up. And so we've just had some really great successes, and it's really been because of the hard work of our community health workers. And if it weren't for the community health workers, I believe we would be just another program with this big execution gap that most programs feel or have.
For the benefit of the audience, let me repeat the question. She works with this professional, works with Pacific Island immigrant populations in New Zealand, and many of them present very late, and she's asking that, is there a similar situation like that in Detroit?
Make no excuses for the women, but sometimes you don't know what you don't know. And when we meet women, some of them have very strong, familial beliefs that my sister went all 9 months without ever seeking care. She was fine. She had a healthy baby. Some people really have true issues with transportation, true issues with just support to, you know, be able to take off work, to, you know, go get prenatal care. So they, we do get them second trimester
in social. And that's why we included the non-pregnant women in our program, because we wanted to do that education before they got pregnant, so, or between pregnancies, so that they would not understand for the next pregnancy that this is what they ought to do, is prenatal care early.
Another question on this? Yes, so. And she's just in Ann Arbor, so. Just prerogative. So 18 to 34, what happens to the women under 18 who would like to be a part of your program?
Well, there was a rationale for that. Of course, you know, I mentioned IRB protocol, and we had to make sure that we could get through that well. But in part, anyone
that's under the age of 18, you know, we're concerned, you know, I guess if you're pregnant, you're emancipated minor, but we didn't want to get into the issues related to, you know, teen pregnancy. Although I serve on the National Board to Prevent Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy, so I'm an advocate in terms of addressing teen and unplanned pregnancy. But we felt that we needed to have a woman that could sign a consent, and then 30, beyond 34, when you get to 35, that's an at-risk category in terms of pregnancy outcomes. We thought it might be best for them to be really followed and get, they need to get into care of a OBGY because they're super high risk, or rather at risk. It's considered a high-risk pregnancy, anything over the age of, anyone over the age of 35. So we kind of deliberately chose that to head into second pregnancy. So we try to work it through and think it through in a way that would work for us.
And on that list of community partners, we were very conscientious and strategic about who we partner with. And there are agencies that just do teen pregnancy. So when the teenagers come to us, we make sure we, like, handhold them through that connection. Or first-time pregnant women, we handhold them all the way to nursing home partnership. So we don't leave anybody. We actually have a very open door policy to just call, and we'll figure it out from there. So.
And that's part of that setting up the safety net. You know, so we have women that we work with directly, but we also, part of setting up that safety net is connecting them to other resources as well.
Some questions on this side? Yes. Right in front of you? Yes. Yes. Your question was addressed. Okay, let me go to the back, sit in, and then I'll come to you.
Services to take
to torture so the woman could bring their children home. I mean, these are stories that happen over and over. So the kind of work they do is just phenomenal, and that's why we have to care for them, because they do this heroic stuff. So even getting calls on Sundays from me, you know, asking about things, but knowing that she kept, you know, those children away from a Child Protective Services review because she thought it was a girlfriend. Now, if she wasn't there, the children might have been taken. You don't have those safe places to bring the children home to, so forth and so on. When she had planned well, but it just sort of fell apart. You and I, we could find another, go buy another set of bassinets. She couldn't. So this community health worker just intervened in pretty phenomenal ways.
We have 2 minutes left, so there's several hands. What I'm going to do is let everyone who has a question ask the question, and then I'll let the panel respond to all of the questions. So there were two questions here.
They were answered before. These Tupperware
house, are they your clients' home, or are they your community health workers? Okay, so they'll come back to the answer. Next, you had a question. Okay, this was about trauma informed, and yes, you had it. Your hand up? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, question was answered. Okay.
My question is about the prevalence of mental health services, needing mental health, and low levels of depression that you find in mental health.
Okay, mental health services. Any other question we want to get on the floor? Yes?
Well, just in terms of question, you know, working 40 hours, overtime, that kind of situation, is that how
what are your hours? What's your schedule like? Is the question. Okay. Any other question we want to put on the floor? Okay. Respond to any and all.
Okay. I'll see how many I can do a rapid.
Okay.
The location of the gatherings that the women have vary. So a lot of them are in the participants' home, but they could be at a local library, a church, wherever they find convenient. I missed the question about the trauma indicators.
But you can connect with us in Detroit about that.
The work week, we do a lot of comp time because it is not traditional hours. But we try to limit them to 40 hours, and we know that they go above and beyond. Even when we say please stop working or don't come, they do like take their Fridays off. But I'm not going to say anything about that. But they've earned that time off. So we do a lot of flexing with their weekend and evening hours. We are just extremely flexible. And also with their class schedules, a lot of our community health workers are trying to improve their own lives too and going back to school. So we just are as flexible as we possibly can be. And then with the mental health services,
a lot of our, almost all of our participants have some mental health issues. We don't diagnose. So whenever someone talks to us about being overwhelmed or extremely stressed or filled with sadness, et cetera, the navigators come back to me. But we always refer out. We always run across that, though. That's very crucial. And when you talk about social chaos, when you talk about social isolation, mental health is at the core of that type of thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in saying really big thank you. They have shown, yes, we can. And I hope that we've all gotten inspiration and ideas to continue to doing this in our own communities. Thank you all for coming.